from days of long ago. From uncharted regions of the universe comes a legend.
And I became He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe.
Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. Panties spreading far and wide. Who can turn the tide?
G.I. Joe.
G.I.
Joe. Fighting for freedom wherever there's trouble.
Welcome to Star Joe's Podcast, episode 276, The Energon Universe. I'm your host, Ryan, and welcome back, everyone. I know it has been a super long time since I've put an episode out. I do apologize for that. As you know from past episodes, just a lot of life things have been going on. But I am back. I'm hoping that this will be more regular. I do still intend to get this up to episode 300. I know I've had a lot of listeners, and friends and everybody just assumed that, the show faded away, pod faded. I promised that was never going to happen. At the very least, there was going to be like one more episode to tell you. This is not the one more episode. Don't worry. I've had a lot going on, this year, some good, some bad. But basically, just so much going on that when it gets to be some free time, I'm using it to read or watch something or, get some other things done. Quite frankly, I'm working on the new comic right now, which kind of, helped jumpstart me doing this episode. So to give you some backdrop to everything. So, everyone knows last year, unfortunately, I lost my mother-in-law, went through a whole lot of things with my father-in-law. I don't want to say his health was declined, but just having some struggles and everything else. So, worked with getting him into, a senior center, which was his idea to do, thankfully. And, yeah, just been dealing with a lot of that, just helping him sell some things. He sold his house, helped him with moving, things like that. So just a lot going on. Anyone that's gone through that, you kind of know there's just a lot. And by the time you're done, you don't have a lot of energy for anything else, unfortunately. But things are in a good place right now. And like I said, I did take some time just for me to do some other things and just kind of just like enjoy some life of just like reading comics, watching shows when I could and things like that. So I do apologize again. Like I've mentioned in the past, it's not that I don't enjoy doing these episodes. I really do. And I am going to miss them when I'm not doing them anymore, but that still will be a little ways off because like I said, I still want to get up to episode 300. I know at the pace I'm going, that's not going to happen for like 3-4 years, but I actually do plan on picking up the pace. I'm recording in my kitchen right now, as you guys have heard me do episodes like this before, so that's why I'm talking at a little bit lower tone, because my wife is asleep upstairs. But I wanted to get something out here for you guys, and it's like after midnight, so we'll see how loopy I get by the end of this, but One of the things that helped kickstart me wanting to do, no pun intended, got me kickstart to want to do an episode is that I do have a new Kickstarter coming up for issue 3 of Stealthhammer, and that has been something that occupied my time a little bit in the last probably month or two. Been working with Joel to get some artwork done and everything else, and he's been amazing with that. The artwork he's doing is incredible. Like, if you've backed it in the past and got the issues and you liked what you saw, like, the pages I've been seeing from this issue are just even more impressive, and I've always been impressed with his artwork up to this point already. So we did have to find another colorist, and it's kind of funny, like, every episode I feel like we've had to get a new color, or every issue we've had to get a new colorist, and it's just due to circumstances. The Luis Delgado, who worked with me on the last issue, he just got overwhelmed with work. And when you're doing something like what I'm doing, where it's very sporadic as far as the issues coming out, it's not a regular month-to-month type thing, he has to take those jobs that are month-to-month, where he can count on that income coming in. So he loads himself up. It makes very little time for something like mine, which is not coming out month to month right now. Hopefully that'll change in the future, but we are going to do a new Kickstarter. It's going to launch April 7th, which is a Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And so, like I said, I'm using that as a reason to kind of kick myself into high gear of doing episodes again. Not because I just want to promote that. I've been wanting to do episodes for a while, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But, like, that just helped the fact that we're doing the issue, and I wanted to get the word out, help motivate me to a little bit, that little bit extra push that I needed to get doing a new episode. So, I hope you'll enjoy this episode. I, of course, will hope that you support the Kickstarter. If you haven't in the past, check it out. We do have a website, it's just stealthhammer.com. You can check that out and see if it's something. It's an all-ages comic, so it's appropriate for kids. So if you have kids, it might be something that they enjoy. But yeah, I appreciate any and all support. Right now, there is a preview page on Kickstarter, so you can go to kickstarter.com, look up Stealthhammer, and there is a preview page that you can click to click to follow, so that when it launches, you're notified, hey, it's launched. And we will run it for 30 days, have some really cool rewards, which I'll mention in future episodes. So just because the Kickstarter is going on, don't think that you're going to get a bunch of Star Joes episodes, and then when the Kickstarter is over, that you're not going to get it anymore. That's not my intention at all. Like I said, my goal is to try to get up to episode 300, if not by the end of this year, then by the very beginning of next year, which will be then 15 years of doing the show. So 300 episodes, 15 years of doing the show. As much as I like doing it, as much as I've made some amazing friends doing this, it's just, I hate to say it, but I'm getting older, and juggling so many things it just starts getting draining. And I feel like 15 years has been a good run. 300 episodes is a good run. I love podcasting. I love talking to you guys. It honestly does mean a lot to me to do this, so I don't want to lessen it or make you think that, like, this is a burden anyway. It's just something had to give at some point. But I can't believe we started doing the show when I was, like, 34, 35 years old. Now I'm 48, turning 49 this year in October. So it's just, yeah, it's a wild ride to get here. And I've made amazing friends, whether I've met you directly and we've hung out, or if I've only met you virtually or interacted with you through various social media type stuff, or never interacted with you before, but you've always felt like this was a show that you connected with, I thank you very much. I'll save a lot more of that type of talk when we get closer to 300. But this episode, I wanted to talk about the Energon Universe stuff. And Because I'm very excited about it. In fact, when it first started coming out, I wanted to do an episode then, and there was a couple times where I almost did. It just, like, things happened. Either something happened that stopped me from doing that, or I wanted to, but that night I was just so drained. Like, you guys weren't going to get any type of good energy from me. And you guys have been without an episode so long that you needed some good energy. So even though it's late here, I am feeling very energized, no pun intended, but I'm feeling very energized and wanting to talk about these things. So, I'm going to cover the first issue of each of the titles. Very likely you've already, if you at all been in touch with what's been going on with this stuff, you have already been reading these and you've been reading the subsequent issues. I am way behind as far as reviewing these with you guys. I have kept up to date on all the issues, but I am behind on reviewing these with you guys. So the titles that came out were Void Rivals, Transformers, Duke, and Cobra Commander in that order. That's how they came out. There was, these, if you aren't familiar with what happened, when it came to the comics, IDW lost the licensing to Transformers and G.I. Joe, as well as I would assume some other Hasbro, license type things that we just haven't seen yet. But they, Robert Kirkman gained the license through Skybound, which is I don't know if it's a subsidiary or if it's just like a sub imprint or something like that of Image. So essentially they're under Image, but Robert Kirkman is the one that owns them. He's the one that owns Skybound, and with Image, it is creator owned. So it's not necessarily, I'm sure Image is getting their cut out of this because they're the ones publishing it and everything, but Skybound is really who owns the licensing, which means that Robert Kirkman's the one that owns it. And it was a really well-kept secret, if you were not aware of this. They, like, retailers barely knew what was about to happen because there was this title coming out called Void Rivals. And, you know, it Robert Kirkman's name was attached to it, so some people, you know, people were ordering it because they're like, okay, this is supposed to be the next big Robert Kirkman thing. There was some speculation that was just a fake out name for him gaining Transformers, which ended up not being the case in a sense. It was a real name for a real title, but it is what introduced what's being known now, or what is known now as the Energon Universe. And the Energon Universe encapsulates, like I said, the title Void Rivals, which I'll get into what that is, but also Transformers and G.I. Joe. So they're all being wrapped up together. Now, if you've not been reading these, I'm sure your first instinct is, if you're someone that doesn't like G.I. Joe meshing with Transformers, is, oh, gee, why are we putting G.I. Joe in with Transformers at the Energon Universe and everything else? All I can say is, unless you are a strict, like, keep everything separate, you're not reading these, you're completely missing out. Because these are some of the best stories I have read of Transformers and G.I. Joe in a while, in a long while. So, like, the last thing I really remember loving a lot that was Transformers, like, to this level, was probably All Hail Megatron during the IDW run. They had a lot of other good runs after that. They had a lot of good arcs and everything else. Like, I did love More Than Meets the Eye and stuff like that. Like, I thought those were really good titles, but just not the impact like this has. G.I. Joe, God, you have to go back to the very beginning, like probably, of IDW's run of like Chucko's Last Laugh, you know, stuff that's impactful like that. you know, the very beginning of G.I. Joe, where it was, if I'm remembering right, excuse my memory again, it's late, but of like Chuck Dixon and Robert working on it. So, like, that's how jazzed I am about these titles. And yes, it's in the Transformers universe. However, there is, right now at least, the Transformers play a part in the G.I. Joe universe, but not in the ways you might think. And not in the ways that would probably worry you in a sense. It's basically like this is all happening on the same Earth, and they're going to interact with each other, and they're going to have impacts on each other. But it's not like you're reading a G.I. Joe story where it's mostly Transformers and G.I. Joe is just playing a role in that. It's when we get into the issues, it'll make a lot more sense, but most of you guys are probably reading all these. I know a lot of you guys have posted about them and everything else, and it's very exciting. Void Rivals is a very interesting title in the sense that it's a completely unique story, but it introduced the Energon universe, and we'll get into how when we go over that issue. But I have some thoughts when it comes to it, and I'm hoping some of those thoughts that I have, because in some sense it's negative, will change over time. And I don't mean like negative in that Void Rivals is a bad story or a bad title. It's actually very good. I just question the Energon universe tie-in stuff. But we'll get into that. So, also, I have been loving these titles so much. And like I said, I do still love Void Rivals. I think it's a very good story. But I've been enjoying these titles so much that I've been getting like some of the second print covers and variant covers and everything else because I just really, really like it a lot. I like this whole universe a lot. So I think this is, I had to find the issues that were easy for me to grab and locate. So I'm not working off of all like first printings. A lot of my first printings I've been stashed away and everything at this point. So Void Rivals, I'm going to cover this issue first, because this is the first one that came out. And this is actually the fifth printing that I have, and the reason I got it was because it had a giant picture of a Transformer on it that we'll get into when we get into the story, because I don't want to spoil it right now. If you have not read these titles, I want to kind of like unveil it as it was unveiled in the story. Now, I will tell you these titles, if you've not read Void Rivals or Transformers, or Duke or Cobra Commander, and you don't want to be spoiled, this is not the episode for you because I'm going to be spoiling them. I'm absolutely covering the first issue of each title. So if you've not read the first issue of them, you want to read them now. I'm going to talk about things that happen after the first issue that might be spoilery. So I'm just warning you now. Because that's what this channel is. We talk about these properties and I want to talk about these comics. So hopefully you're up to date. Cobra Commander number 3 was the last one that came out. Duke, I think, had number 3 already come out. Transformers had number 6 come out. And Void Rivals, I think it was number 7 that just came out. Maybe 8, but I think it was just number 7. So I'm not necessarily going to talk about every single issue, so don't worry about that. But I am going to talk about some things that happen after these first issues a little bit, because in some cases they're relevant. So I can tell you I'm not going to talk about like late issues of Void Rivals really much at all. I'm not going to talk about, but I am going to talk about some things that happen subsequent issues as far as appearances and things like that. I'm not going to cover the full arc of Transformers. I'm only going to cover the first issue, but I'll mention some things that happen in later issues that are relevant to some of the titles here. Duke, review the first issue, might talk about some things that happen in that, and the same thing with Cobra Commander. So again, if you're not up to date, you might want to pause, get up to date, and come back. Because this is what this channel is. We cover this stuff. So we used to cover every single issue of all these properties when they came out, and we just got away from that. So I kind of want to get back to that a little bit just because I'm really excited about these titles. I thought about covering, Thundercats in number one in this episode, but I'm going to do that as a completely separate episode and not by itself. So it's not like I'm just going to do a Thundercats number one episode and have it be really short. What I'm going to do is I'm going to review Thundercats number one, Thundercats number two. And then there was a issue that came out recently called, Nacelleverse number zero, which has Sectars in it, and it has like Roboforce in it, Power Lords and stuff like that. Very excited about Sectars especially. So I'm going to cover that. Oh, it's kind of Biker Mice from Mars. So I'm going to cover those three together, because that's again some 80s stuff going on in there. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff coming out. Like there's a Dick Tracy comic coming out soon. There is a, Space Ghost comic coming out soon. There's a, Gatchaman Battle of the Planets comic that's coming out soon. In fact, there's going to be a free comic book day issue of it. Turtles are getting rebooted, not rebooted, like kind of relaunched with Jason Aaron writing it. Which is very exciting. There's a lot going on with these properties again. It reminds me of the time when we started doing this show and there was all this stuff coming out. So, and all of it looks like it's some good stuff. Johnny Quest is having a new comic coming out that also will have a free comic book day issue, that comes out. So yeah, just like I said, it's a good time to be enjoying licensed properties. So, all right. So we open up with, in Void Rivals, and this was written by Robert Kirkman. Artist was Lorenzo De Felici, and colorist is Matthias Lopez, and letterer is Russ Wooten. The art is absolutely beautiful in this, by the way. So we have some, a spaceship crash landing, a fist comes punching out. And it's the fist is actually a talking hand. It's a mechanical hand on this pilot, and it's like helping the pilot survive. It punched through the canopy of the spaceship, and it starts pulling him out. It starts scanning for a med pack. It locates one not too far away and just starts pulling him towards it. It pushes the button. The canister pops out. However, it pops out pretty far away. The hand then like is able to crawl towards that. So there's a bit of humor there. The hand is very comical. It's kind of like, think of Skeets with Booster Gold, where Skeets is kind of like the voice of reason and logical and stuff like that to the detriment of the character almost sometimes. Like basically not doing, like Skeets doesn't do what Booster wants him to do. And that's kind of what the hand is doing. Like this hand is like, it's logical. It's wanting to survive. So anyways, it launches this med pack, and it actually says drat, so the hand can talk, because it launches far away. He pulls the body over. It, evidently is like some type of stimulus, shot that like, he shoots the pilot with, and, the pilot wakes up and he's like, the crash must have knocked me out. And we learn that his name is Derek, D-A-R-A-K, Derek. And, he's like, call me Derek. And so he's trying to figure out where they're at and what's going on. He knows that he, was following certain protocols and everything else, that they were, trying to get some resources, and then, a battle broke out and he crashed on this planet. He's checking out his ship. It looks like it needs a lot of repairs. It doesn't look like there's anything in the area. And then all of a sudden he gets attacked. There's like a shot that happens over his head, and we see that there is another being across from him that just had fired this like spear type thing at his head. And we get the title of Void Rivals. And it has a very Enemy Mine feel to it, especially in this issue. And I'm trying to remember the actors in that. So I know it was, almost certain it was Quaid, and I want to say Louis Gossett Jr., but I could be totally wrong. But basically it's like, Enemy Mine was like a human and an alien crash are stuck together on a planet, and they have to learn to work together, even though they were enemies of each other. It's kind of the same thought here. So we have Derek trying to fire back with a, like this hand zapper type blaster. However, it's damaged, so it's not firing. And this other being who had shot at him, tackles him, and then he kicks the person and they go tumbling down, but they're fighting and they're hitting each other as they're tumbling down this hill. And then just as Derek lifts a rock to smash her head in, she says, please. And he's like, please, are you begging me to spare you? Would any of your people ever spare my kind? Well, would you? And she's like, probably not. And he drops the rock and he goes, an honest Zertonian. What are the odds of that? And he gets off of her and she's like, you're not going to kill me. And he says, no. And, the hand goes, my program compels me, to remind you that you are, honor bound to subdue every Zertonian you encounter. Your actions are, akin to treason. So basically, because he's not willing to kill this Zertonian, he might be tried for treason for it. And she says, the Agorian crutch speaks. So we've learned now that she is a species called Zertonian. He's a species called Agorian. So they have a bit of back and forth. He explains that his ship is damaged. They go to her ship and she says, tells him to stay back. He says, this isn't going to work if we have to keep looking over our shoulders. Are we good? And she goes, I don't know. Are we? He goes, I want to live. You want to live. Let's just get to work. So they start working on, her ship, taking parts from his ship and kind of blending them together and working on them. They start to put together their, start putting together the engine. But then all of a sudden it seems like it's revving up too much and that it's not worked, like the parts aren't as compatible as they were hoping. And an explosion happens and Derek tackles her to protect her. She's like, get off of me. And he goes, I was only trying to, help you. And the reason she wanted him off of her wasn't because of like, hey, get off of me. You're my enemy. But it was because the back of his jacket was on fire. So she actually used, an extinguisher, unit thing that she has on her wrist to actually put that fire out. So they realize they have a lot more work ahead of them. The fire goes out eventually and they start working on the ship some more. She goes out to see what else is out there. She comes running back saying, you're never going to believe what I found. Come on, we leave now. We'll reach it by next cycle. When they get down into this like ravine, they find this ship that is just like crashed down in there. And they're like, this is amazing. Any clue how long it's been here? She's like, who cares? It's a ship. Oh, and by the way, we do find out that her name is Solila. So the Zertonian is Solila and the Gorian is Derek. They start, removing the debris off of this ship. They, charge it up a little bit. And all of a sudden, as they're charging it up, they start hearing, and, which is of course the sound of a transformer. And who do we have there? But now we have a giant robot, which is Jetfire or Skyfire or whatever the hell you want to call him. In here, I believe he is referred to as Jetfire. So, that is actually who's on the cover of the fifth printing. He was also on, he's been on a lot of covers for Void Rivals number one, but he was on like the super secret spoiler cover of the first issue, the first printing of the first issue. So, but he's been on multiple printings of issue one since then. So this was like the big reveal. I mean, we were a good 10, 12 pages into this story, and we were dealing with like this enemy mine situation, and then also we get with Jetfire, and people, rightfully so, lost their minds. They were just like, oh my god, this is the introduction of the Transformers. This, and also some people thought that Void Rivals was just going to be a one shot to do this introduction, and then it wasn't going to continue, but in actuality, it's an ongoing series. So, yeah, Jetfire shows up, and Solila goes like, what is that? And Jetfire's like, do not be afraid. He actually says, I'm Jetfire, Cybertronian scientist. Can you please tell me how long I've been here? And they're like, no, we can't. And he's like, my word, I'm detecting significant microscopic fungal growth, atmosphere, wind resistion. He says, I've been stranded here for millions of... And then he's like, Cybertron, all these years, I'm sorry, I have to get home. And he transforms again. You get the... And he flies off. And they're like, no, wait. So they're now stranded again. So that's like, that's literally the introduction of the Energon universe is, or the pure sign that this is the Energon universe is Jetfire shows up in this issue. So they're stranded again, I didn't mention this, but they both are wearing like these helmets and these bodysuits and everything else. And it is like forbidden for them to remove their helmets, especially in front of each other. So think of the Mandalorians where like they can't remove the helmet in front of another. Except in this case, it's like they can't remove it in front of their enemy. But they, in this case, they do decide to, remove, he says, so they're speaking about like, their armor and everything else. And, Solila says, are you actually suggesting we take our helmets off, forgetting how many sacred decrees, that breaks? I don't know if I'll be able to work with you after seeing your hideous Agorian face. He goes, I'm afraid you're just going to have to find a way. I'd rather look at your misshapen Zertonian face than die. And he says, then they take their helmets off and they find out they look very similar to each other. The only difference between the two of them, like their skin color is the same. They're both humanoid. The only difference is they both have like these, almost like gems on their foreheads, and his is like an orange and hers is like a green. But they're basically this, I mean, for all intents and purposes, they're essentially the same species. And Derek actually says, we're the same. It's just like my vision. And she's like, what vision? And that's where the issue ends. And then when you turn the page, after the letter page, it says the Energon universe has arrived. And then you saw, like, the next page was Transformers number 1 coming out October, Duke number 1 coming out in December, Core Commander number 1 coming out in January. So basically they made sure that there was some space between this and solicitations for other stuff, so this way it wasn't spoiled for anyone. Very cool story, very interesting story. It's a good setup issue. So here's my thing with Void Rivals. So I really loved this issue when it came out, and I really loved seeing Jetfire. Like, that was super exciting, even though it was very short-lived. I really like the story that Kirkman's telling here of these two species that are essentially the same. And as the series goes on, we learn that it feels like that's been a cover-up all along. Like, that these people were separated from each other, and it was always intended for them to not discover that they're actually the same people. Like, as if this conflict was generated to benefit some other people that are in, like, a secret society type thing. You know, keep people battling. Very, a nice analogy, I guess, for what, I mean, not to be political, but what I feel like we face in our country right now, where it's like you're on this side or that side, and it feels oftentimes like they'd rather, like, people in charge would rather us be fighting with each other so that we're not seeing what they're not actually accomplishing for us. So it feels like there's some commentary here in this series. Like I said, this issue itself, it's basically, like I said, very enemy mine. They're rivals. They work together. And then they realize that they actually have more in common than they thought. So as the series went on, we got introduced to other Transformer type characters. Like, issue 2 had, I can't remember the name of the beings, but it was this pig type alien looking being, which I remember from the Transformers cartoon. He's kind of a scavenger, and he picks up, like, these guys get off planet in a ship that they devise, but then they're kind of like lost in space. And then they get picked up by this alien from Transformers. So that felt more like part of the story, because I was like, okay, it could be any alien picking them up, but it just so happens to be this alien being from Transformers, which is totally fine. That didn't feel really that forced. In that they fight, they go into one of the rooms on the ship because they're trying to escape, because he actually wants to turn them in for, like, a reward. And when they go to escape, they unlock this one cell, and out of it comes this giant metal scorpion, which I assume was meant to be Scorponok from the Transformers, although this doesn't transform, and it's not the gigantic version of Scorponok from, like, G1, probably more like Scorponok from, like, Beast Wars and stuff. But yeah, it's... So even that, I was like, okay, kind of get that. Then we get introduced to the Quintessons. They show up. And the more I was reading Void Rivals, and the more I was reading that story, the more the Transformers stuff characters that would pop in and pop out felt like forced stories in this universe. Like, and what I mean by that is, like, even though the Transformers alien guy picks them up and then they escape from him, that's fine. That works for the story. But every issue after that, it was like they were purposefully putting a Transformers little vignette in the middle of the story. Like, we would be reading about Derek and Solila and what they're experiencing, and like they get back home, they get back to Solila's home. He gets thrown into a prison. She gets thrown into a prison because it's revealed that she showed her, took her mask off in front of him. So, you know, very Mandalorian when it comes to that, if you've watched The Mandalorian. And they escape together. They have a bounty hunter after them now and stuff like that. So all of that's a good story, and, like, I'm enjoying that. But then there'll be these little, like, one, two-page, a couple, like, two or three pages where it's, like, Shockwave shows up. And not in the main story. Like, we're going to where Shockwave is, and he's interacting with the Quintessons, and he's interacting with that pig-like alien guy. It's... And then we go right back to the regular Void Rivals story. So, like, and say, like you said, same thing with the Quintessons and stuff like that. Like, all of that was like, okay, let's put these two, three pages in here so that there's something Transformers in there. Even though it has, so far, nothing to do with the main story of what we're reading. Like, zero. Like, the only time that there's actually interaction with the main story is this issue where Jetfire shows up, which is extremely short-lived, and when they get picked up by the pig alien guy and have to fight Scorponok, and then they escape, and then that's over. Like I said, and that's probably the one that makes the most sense. That's the one that's like, okay, they got picked up by an alien, they decided to use a Transformers, very obscure Transformers alien, but still a Transformers type alien, to pick them up. They fight a Scorponok type robot thing, and then they escape. But everything with the Quintessons, everything with Shockwave and stuff like that, plays, at least right now, plays no role in the main story of Void Rivals. It's literally put two or three pages in there for that. And because of that, in this first issue, having the Jetfire appearance also feels like it's completely just forced and put in there. Because if you took the Jetfire pages out of this, it would change none of the story. Like, Jetfire plays no role. Now, he shows up later in Transformers, but he plays no role in this story. It's literally his role of what's going on here plays more into the Transformers issue. So it's just a way of, if you're reading Void Rivals and you're reading Transformers, like, okay, here, you now know where Jetfire came from. But it doesn't impact this story at all. Like I said, if you took the Jetfire part out of this issue, no impact. Nothing would change with this story at all. And that's how a lot of the other future Void Rival issues are. Like I said, outside of maybe issue 2, or really probably issue 3, because I think issue 2 is when you just get the reveal of the pig alien guy. It's really issue 3 when he interacts with them and they fight the Scorponok creature and then they escape. But all the issues outside of that, issue 4, issue 5, issue 6, issue 7, anytime you see something Transformers related, it plays no part in the Void Rival story. Like I said, so far. Now, it is Robert Kirkman. I'm going to assume and hope that he's not just forcing this stuff in there to be like, hey, look, Transformers stuff. Because I just haven't seen how the Quintessons or Shockwave play into this story, but it could very easily change. It very easily could be, oh, the Quintessons have been working with that shadow group, or Shockwave has as well, or something like that. I do know that I saw a cover coming up for Void Rivals that shows Springer on it. So I assume that Springer is going to be revealed in one of the issues, and that could be when it starts playing more of a factor. I'm kind of curious with these characters, like, could they lead into something that is Transformers lore? Like, could they become headmasters or target masters and things like that? Because I know that stuff involved alien beings, like, taking on, like, body suits and stuff like that to become those parts. So I don't know. I haven't looked up, Agorian or Zertonian on, like, doing a Google search to see if that plays into Transformers lore at all. I don't think it does. I haven't read anything that, like, talked about that, but maybe people just haven't looked into it. I don't know. I would assume someone's looked into it at this point. But like I said, I don't know what this, because I'm curious what the species were, and I'm sure someone out there knows this, because by the time Headmasters came out and Target Master stuff came out, I was pretty much out of Transformers at that point. I think I own one Headmaster as a kid, which was Snapdragon. And I didn't get him because of his Headmaster. I got him because he was like a six changer, I think, or a triple changer. Yeah, he was a triple changer. He changed from a robot to a dragon to a jet. It was a very cool Transformer, but he was a Headmaster. And I don't know if what those beings were that became head, you know, became part of the Headmaster stuff, but I'm kind of curious if that's what Foy Rivals will be, especially with them having those gems on their heads and everything else. Like, does that allow them to connect with Cybertronians in some way or something like that? Very curious if that's where things will lead to. But as it is right now, Void Rivals is a very good story. I do highly recommend reading it, but the Transformer stuff seems secondary in it right now. It just feels like it's very forced in there. So, just my opinion. Going into Transformers number one, this I'm working off of a third printing, which has Ratchet versus Starscream on a cover. This is by writer and artist is Daniel Warren Johnson, who I love. He's not for everybody when it comes to his art. I think he's an amazing writer. I really enjoy his artwork, but it is very kinetic. It is very stylized and like scratchy, I guess is the best way to describe it. But I first came across his storytelling and artwork with Wonder Woman Dead Earth. And I'm not talking about the Dead Earth annuals that came out years and years ago. I'm talking about there was a Black Label miniseries called Wonder Woman Dead Earth. Cannot recommend it enough. It is an amazing Wonder Woman story. It's completely out of continuity, but it is absolutely impressive. I could not put it down when I was reading it. So I read that, absolutely loved it, then read his Beta Ray Bill, which I thought was excellent. And then people were telling me, like, oh, you should read Murder Falcon by him and Extremity by him. So I've picked those up. I've started reading Extremity. I really like it a lot. But I haven't read the other, I haven't finished reading that yet. And I have not started reading Murder Falcon, but I plan to. He also had Do a Power Bomb come out, and that is fantastic. If you're not, it's a wrestling story, but it's not a wrestling story. I'm not a wrestling fan, and I loved Do a Power Bomb. If you are a wrestling fan, you probably would get even more out of it, but I really, really enjoyed it because it's like any good story. It's a story about the characters and not about wrestling. It's the focus is like The Walking Dead isn't about the zombies. It's about the people. So yeah. And by the end of Do a Power Bomb, if you're not tearing up, I don't think you have a soul. But he's become this amazing writer. And like I said, I really like his artwork. It might not be for everybody, but I really do enjoy it. And I think it works extremely well for Transformers. Now, also credits is Mike Spicer is the colorist and Russ Wooten is the letterer. Now he's going to stop doing the artwork as of issue 6. So issue 6 just came out. He's going to continue writing it, but he's going to be another artist on it. Now, I don't know if that's a permanent thing. I'm hoping that he's going to be at least writing it for a while. My fear is that he's going to write it for like another arc and then be done. But it's, I don't know, it's an amazing job he's doing here. Transformers is for sure my favorite of the Energon Universe stuff. And I love all of it, but so far Transformers is like my number one favorite. As soon as I have it, I have to read it. So we open up on this. We see some Apache helicopters flying past a sunset. We see the arc of the Transformers crashing towards Earth. We see some military guys. One has been shot in the face, and the other one's trying to like hold the blood in and everything else. We see Optimus Prime, who looks like he's been killed or destroyed. He's just like, his face is like all beaten up, and he's got like, just, he looks like he did when he died in the animated movie. And then we see a rocket shuttle spacecraft taking off. And we hear someone say, "Dad," and here it's Spike. And he's, says, you know, "I've been looking for you." And, basically his dad's been just drinking his sorrows away. And we get a hint that, he has another son who isn't with them anymore. And my guess is that that is who we see on the first page of, where his face is all bloodied up and everything else, is that he lost one of his, he lost his one son in the war. So, so then someone that works with, Spike's dad is known as Sparky. He has a coworker that shows up and asks him like, "Hey, still need a ride for the night shift?" And, Sparky's like, "Yeah." And Spike heads out, and, Sparky's like, "Eventually you're going to have to grow up, Spike." And, Spike says, "And be like you." And Sparky's like, let's go. Then we see Carly show up, and she has this van with this like amazing medieval barbarian painting on the side of it. And my guess was that it was like an homage to Dark Star, because it's like this Conan the Barbarian, guy on the side of it. And then there's like a wizard to his left. There's a castle behind him, and there's like this dragon behind him. And if you look up Dark Star, you'll see him, you'll see this barbarian type guy with a sword. And he's riding like this green dragon. And that's what this looks like a little bit. So I don't know if it's an homage to that or if it's somehow tied into Extremity. Like I said, I just started reading that, but it's got some of this type of element stuff to it, but, not quite. Or it's just that he just figures that what someone would paint on the side of a van is this, medieval fantasy type thing. So, anyways, Carly's like, "That sounded rough." He's like, "Yeah, Carly, it was." And she's like, "Come on." And she talks about how, you know, did you talk to your dad about Berkeley? And he's like, "We didn't make it that far." And he's like, I know. And, he says, I'll tell him soon. What about you? Are you looking at art schools?" And while they're talking, all of a sudden the bottom of the floor, they're in this cave area and stuff like that, where they're going to be do some photography and, using a telescope and everything else. And the ground underneath them just falls out from underneath them. And they check with each other if each other's okay. And then they look over and they notice that, they're like, "Where are we?" And they fear they fell into like an engine area of the Ark. So Carly then says, like, we have to get out of here. And she's like, Spike, and here he's looking in another room. And that's where we see, like, all of the Transformers. And he's like, she's like, what are those? He goes, I don't know, some sort of robots. But we see, like, all these Transformers, all these Cybertronians, like, just laying completely destroyed. And then we hear a and we see that it's Jetfire. And actually, the page before that, we see, if you look really close in the distance, you see Jetfire, like, flying in. And we know he was flying in from where he was at Void Rivals. And we don't know how long it took him to get there. That's one thing with these. The timelines aren't exactly clear on all the titles when they're happening. There's definitely a close connection between Transformers and Duke, but not 100% sure with Void Rivals and Cobra Commander. So as far as, like, when is Void Rivals taking place exactly? When is Cobra Commander taking place? I'm sure it's all going to become a lot more clear, but it doesn't matter because the stories are awesome. And we do know that they're tied into each other and everything, but anyways, we don't know how long it took Jetfire to come from where he was with Void Rivals to being in Transformers number one. So Jetfire doesn't see them at all. And they hide behind the arm of somebody. we actually see the hand that looks like actually they're hiding behind the hand of possibly Starscream, possibly Optimus Prime, but it might be Starscream. It actually is Starscream because Jetfire starts up Teletran 1 and uses it to wake up Starscream. And Starscream loses, like, his hand comes up and Teletran, like, brings up all the pieces of Starscream and puts them all back together. And he's like, Starscream, my old friend, Jetfire is saying this to him, I have not seen you for centuries. And Starscream says, Jetfire, comrade, thank you for waking me. I'm glad to find you've picked the right side. So this goes back to, while it's not, this is a different continuity and everything else, but this goes back to, if you watch the Transformers cartoon, Jetfire and Starscream were colleagues. They both were scientists at one point. And so this is why Jetfire trusted Starscream when he first arrived and became a Decepticon for him. But then he saw the evils that Starscream did and was no longer the scientist that he was and became an Autobot because of it. It's some similar happening here. Is basically they have a history in the past, and Starscream, this is where stuff gets insane. Starscream stands over the body of Bumblebee and blasts him in the face. So basically ensuring that Bumblebee can't be woken up like he was just woken up. That was brutal. Like, I don't know if we're going to see Bumblebee, because, again, they are robots, so, like, to an extent, they're living beings, but they're robots. So I don't know if that means, like, nope, not going to see Bumblebee, because, I mean, he blasts him in the face. And that was intense, because, like, you didn't see that since, like, again, maybe Transformers the movie, where Megatron started killing off all of our favorite characters. Spike and Carly are shocked at this. Jetfire is like, what are you doing? And he's like, don't you see the markings I wear proudly on my wing? Wake up, old friend. We have been at war for the past 100 years. He's like, let me do what must be done. Teletran 1, in the meantime, starts picking up pieces of Optimus Prime, and Jetfire is trying to stop Starscream, and Starscream blasts him in the face, or blasts him in the chest, I should say. But Jetfire is like, stop, and Starscream is out of my way, and Jetfire is like, this is madness, and Starscream is like, exactly. So again, very Starscream, very intense, very cool. It's what you expect Starscream to be. Like, Starscream is a true threat here. Not just the whiny, you know, character that, you know, bungled everything and all that. Like, he's a real threat. So Jetfire's like dying and, Starscream's about to shoot Jazz now in the face, which I was like, no, because that's like one of my favorites. And all of a sudden a hand comes out and grabs the, Starscream's gun, wrist gun. And, Starscream's like, what? And Optimus Prime is like, never. And just like clocks him, like pulls him in and clocks him with the, with one hand and like clocks, Starscream with the other fist. And Spike's like, whoa. And, Optimus Prime is like shooting beings while they lie helpless. Starscream, I thought you were a warrior. And Starscream says, unlike you, Optimus Prime, I do whatever it takes. And then he goes to, he's struggling with Optimus, and Optimus does like a suplex with him. So very reminiscent of do a power bomb, but like just, yeah, just lays him down. Then Optimus Prime notices Spike and Carly, and he's like, what are you? And he's like, I'm Spike. Starscream starts firing at them, and Optimus can only think to like protect the humans. And then all of a sudden Ratchet, who had been woken up, kicks Starscream to the side. They go for cover because now all of a sudden Skywarp has woken up and he's shooting at them. Starscream's working on getting Soundwave woken up. Optimus Prime and Ratchet are hiding behind a barrier. They realize they need to get over to the trailer to get out of there so they can like load up their brethren and save them. So Optimus, ever the leader, says, you load our warriors in there, and Ratchet's like, it'll be tight, but, and all of a sudden Optimus sees his gun and he's like, you go. And he says, I'll buy you time. And he runs for his gun. But now we've got Soundwave has woken up and he fires his shoulder cannon at Optimus, which he has always had, and I don't know if we've ever seen him use it. Like, I'm sure at some point in an IDW run or something like that, we've seen Soundwave use that shoulder cannon that he has, but I can't recall it. And he just like blasts it at Optimus. Optimus goes flying and his gun goes flying, and Ratchet yells out Optimus as he's trying to like load up Wheeljack into the trailer. Optimus pulls himself up and he sees that Bumblebee is laying there with his face blasted off, and he just can't believe it. And Starscream takes advantage of that and he says, look at you, this fool, mourning over the weakest of them all. And Optimus is trying to reach for his gun, but he can't. And Soundwave activates Ravage, and Ravage jumps out of his chest and starts chasing after him. Optimus is, and he bites down on Optimus's arm that's reaching for the gun, and he just can't get to it. And Spike then darts out from behind cover, and Carly's like, Spike, what are you doing? She's like, we don't even know what side he's on. And he's like, Spike's like, Carly, just push. And they push Optimus's giant rifle to him. He picks it up and he shoots Ravage, which Soundwave's like, no. And, so he shows that he cares about him. Then he knocks, Starscream off of him, and Skywarp's about to like foot stomp on Optimus's face, but Optimus rolls out of the way. Optimus looks behind him and notices that Thundercracker and Reflector are both starting to get put back together. And he shoots over at Teletram 1. He's like, I have no choice, because he knows they'll be far outnumbered if this continues. Optimus, and, you know, Ratchet's just like, Optimus, we're loaded up. And he's just like, whoa. because he looks over and sees Optimus running with Carly and Spike in his hand with his gun. I mean, you can almost hear you got the touch in your head because it's just like this amazing movie type scene. Optimus transforms into the rig and connects the trailer to himself, and they go, and there's like the sideways panel, you have to turn the comic sideways for. Ratchet's transformed into his ambulance, and they're driving, they're heading towards the edge, and they go leaping off, and then they land onto some, like a cliff type, edge, and they're driving off, and Starscream is chasing after them, shooting at them. Jetfire surprisingly gets himself up, and he's like, "Optimus, I'm coming." And he flies after him, shoots at Starscream. Starscream, realizes that he's being attacked, calls upon Skywarp. Skywarp, and Starscream both go after Jetfire, shoot him down, blow him up, and, Optimus gets over to where Jetfire crash landed and basically watches Jetfire pass away. It's actually done very well, very emotional, very sad. We go back and see Starscream and Soundwave and stuff. Soundwave's like cradling Ravage in his hands. They realize they're going to need energy. We then cut to, Sparky, Sparkplug as I know him, Sparky and Davey at the place they work at, which is like a power plant. And they're having a whole discussion. And then all of a sudden Starscream comes in and breaks up that whole situation and is tearing down, some of the towers and everything else there to figure out what they need to get power. Davey goes running towards his truck. He's like, "Let's get out of here." And Starscream's, "What's this now?" And is like giggling, laughing as he reaches and grabs Davey and Sparkplug. Sparky's just like still in the doorway, just hiding now. And Starscream picks up Davey and he's like, "Oh, so fragile." And just like starts crushing him. And then you just see the words "squish" done in like a bloody type lettering. And Starscream's like laughing and saying, "So pathetic." Like, again, never saw anything like this in Transformers before. Like, even though they saw the human beings as puny and weak and everything else, you never saw them just like pick one up for the maniacal fun of it and crush them in their hands, completely splattering them. And that's what you get here. And like, that was just a shocking ending. I did not expect to see anything like that in a Transformers title. It's intense. And what we find out later, so like I said, I was going to talk about some future issues. What we find out later is that Davey was actually Carly's dad, which is a whole nother emotional spectrum to go through. It's a whole journey that she goes through with that. But also in issue 2, Starscream is traveling to get resources and everything else. He sees a jet up in the sky and he goes up to attack it. And just for fun, just like he did with this human where Davey picked him up and squished him, he just goes up to take out this jet, in case it's a potential threat, I guess, and stuff. But it's a jet that has two passengers in it. And they both have to eject because Starscream turns into a robot and like goes to take him out. And Starscream kills the pilot. And the passenger that was in there is Duke. And Duke barely survives. He's able to shoot Starscream in the face. But he, you know, he's carrying the fact that he saw a friend of his that was, you know, this other soldier, this pilot, just get killed by this giant robot. And so it's super intense. So then that leads us into Duke, which never thought I'd say this, but Duke is awesome in this Energon universe. He is absolutely amazing. They've done an incredible job. And this is my typical way of characterizing Duke. Duke in this is how I always saw Flint be in the cartoon. Like, basically, if this was the cartoon, this would actually be Flint acting this way and not Duke. But it's awesome. Like, it is very, very cool. I'm glad they're doing a good job with Duke in this. Basically doing him right. But making him human too. Like, so it's really interesting. So, I'm working off of a second print of Duke number one, which has Destro on the cover of it. They've started doing a really cool thing with these titles, all these Energon Universe ones, where the second print is like a focus on a particular character, in the Energon Universe. They've had Duke, they've had, Optimus Prime, they've had Jazz, like, they're always on the cover with, like, the logo behind them. So we have Destro here on the cover of Duke number one, second printing, with the Cobra symbol behind him. And I believe there was another cover also for number one that was second printing. The one that was the most ridiculous was for Void Rivals number five. They did a second printing, which had the Quintessons on it. There was five covers, each for a different face of the Quintesson. So that was bananas. But I do have all of them. I have all of the second prints that have the characters on them. So I really like how those look. And then there's also, like, I think 1 in 10 or 1 in 25 issues of Duke and Cobra Commander where it's like artwork with the explosion artwork behind it. So very much like the file cards for the G.I. Joe figures. It's done kind of like that. So I do have those kind of, it stinks because they're, like I said, they're like, I think 1 in 25 variants, which means they're a little bit more pricey to get. So I might not be getting those anymore just because I don't want to have to pay extra to get those. But I like the ones that I have. I think I have the Cobra Commander one, Duke, Baroness, Stalker, and Zarana. So, and that's the cool thing with these titles too, is they're bringing in characters and giving them the spotlight that aren't necessarily always the number one characters. So, like, they do have Zarana in the Cobra Commander series. They do have some other characters we're going to talk about as well. Playing a major role. Like, we just saw Ratchet playing a bigger role in Transformers. So, we're going to get later on in that series, you get Cliffjumper and stuff too. So it's really very cool. All right. So we open up with Duke. It's written by Joshua Williamson, who I really like as a writer. Artist is Tom Riley. Colorist is Jordy Belair, and letterer is Russ Wooten. So you can notice the letterer is pretty consistent through all of this. So we see that Duke is like one of the number one soldiers out there. That's what we would expect him to be. He's just the guy. They call him the man of, a man of action. But now it's like, what has happened to you? He's actually meeting with Hawk, which is very cool. And Hawk is saying to him, he's like, all these amazing things that you did, they don't mean Jack now. He's like, what happened to you, Conrad? He's like, frankly, I expected this of your brother, referring to Falcon. He's like, you just have to pass the psych eval and stop asking questions. And Duke says, with all due respect, Colonel Hawk, I saw what I saw, and it's giving you a little bit of a playback, just a snippet of how he had to face off against Starscream. And it's given him some serious PTSD, which you would expect it would. I mean, if you had a giant robot in your face and you barely survived it, and you saw someone get killed in front of you, they show it pretty brutally here. It's done pretty brutally in Transformers 2, but like basically like the pilot ejects out And Starscream spreads his hands real wide and smacks them together to splat the pilot. Duke uses he's parachuting out, but he turns on a jetpack that he has and ignites it and fires a flare or a gun or something like that into the face of Starscream and gets away. So he barely survives. So Hawk tells him, he's like, it was an accident. And, Duke asks, what about his family? And Hawk's like, we took care of them. And he's like, yeah, with lies. He's like, Hawk's like, I was wrong. You're not ready. Take some time off, go on vacation, have some fun, dance with some women, get your head right, and then come back. And Duke is just having none of it, and he goes storming off. So then 6 months later, he is traveling around. We see that he has, books about UFOs and a book called Mindbender, which I found very interesting. And he goes to, this meeting for UFO type enthusiasts and everything else. And he was asked to be there to meet there by Dr. Adele Burkhart, which again has a long history with G.I. Joe. And he's like, this is not what I was, Duke says, that's not what I was expecting. And she's like, come on, step into my office. And she shows him a bunch of different stuff when it comes up that she's been collecting data wise when it comes to aliens. And then she actually shows some different, plans that she's been coming across. And she says the creation of new kinds of weapons, unlike the world has ever seen. And we see plans for the mass device, which I thought was really cool. He says, I saw a lot in the service and thought I had seen it all. Then I saw a robot in the sky and everyone said I was crazy. It made me question everything, but you gave me hope and that I'm not as crazy as I thought. And she goes, this is why I reached out to you. She goes, after hearing your story, I believed you have stumbled onto a high-tech arms race and the company on the edge of that, is Mars Industry. So she believes that this isn't necessarily aliens, but it's more of some type of arms dealings that are going on. She sends Duke into Mars Industries to kind of scope out what's going on. We then see stuff like Cobra Claws and Hiss Tanks and Fangs and the Snake Armors and stuff like that, which is all very, very cool. And he's realizing that, okay, there are robots. He sees the Snake Armor. He's like, okay, I knew it. Basically, they're building stuff to destroy us. In the meantime, a hand comes up behind him. And it's Mercer. So he's on the Cobra side right now. Who knows if he's going to be on the good guy side later. But him and Duke fight. And Mercer keeps getting back up, even though Duke keeps fighting him. And then all of a sudden, Duke gets swarmed by a whole bunch of soldiers. And they're holding him. And Mercer, punches him in the gut. And they start pulling him to a new area. They throw him down, and a voice comes over like this statue that says, he's seen too much. Let me kill him now. Mercer, I believe, is saying that, and the person behind it, of course, is Destro. We only see him in shadows. He's like, calm down. If my family killed everyone poked their nose into our business, we would have gone under centuries ago. We are hardly the only people keeping an eye on him. If he were to disappear or die, it would draw too much attention to our operation. It would turn us into the target. There are other ways to deal with our curious friend. And they show, Duke on a screen. They show Dr. Adele Burkhardt on the screen. Duke gets released. He basically, tries to contact Dr. Burkhardt, and he says, "I found proof." Gets back to where all the UFO people were, and they've all been slaughtered. Like, it's bad. They're like all been gunned down. He goes racing into where Burkhardt was. She's been shot, and they're like, she's like, "Got all my research, but he missed this." And he's like, sitting at Duke's like, "Save it, Doc. We need to get you to the hospital. I'm calling." And she's like, "We're out of time. You can't let it fall into the wrong hands. Find the truth." And she gives him the last bit that he, of information that she has. All of a sudden we see, some basically Cobra type soldiers come in. They're labeled the police. I mean, they look like they're Cobra soldiers though. And he's like, Duke's like, "Whoa, boys, I'm unarmed. We're on the same side here. Just let me get my ID." And they're, and the one guy says, "He's got a gun." And they start shooting at him. And he goes darting into the hallway. Now, how he misses, how they miss him, there's like a good 10 guys there with guns. And they all miss shooting at him in a small room. I don't buy it, but it's exciting and it's fun. So it is what it is. Duke goes flying up the steps and he crashes out of a window, lands in the bushes below, and runs away. Now, granted, he didn't get away completely unscathed. He does get shot in the arm a bit. He's bleeding. He's trying to, you know, he's just trying to get away. And there's a call that gets, made, and, basically, I can't remember who it is that's saying this, but basically they have to call in some help to track Duke down, and they decide they're going to, they're like, "We need, when we want to track an American hero, we get American heroes," and we see Stalker and Rock and Roll, and they're going to be coming in the next issue. And that was very cool to see them. We do get to see them in the next issue. They do track down Duke. They do capture him. And they've known him for a while. You can tell there's a relationship there. Duke gets paired up with the Baroness, in prison. They start to escape together. We get to see, Major Blood, make an appearance. Which is very cool. It's done extremely well. Like, I would say, like, Transformers is my favorite of the Energon Universe ones, and Duke is, like, a close second. Like, it's a good, like, action-packed story. Void Rivals is probably my least favorite, but I do still really enjoy it. And like I said, I think the reason why I enjoy it less is because so far the Energon Universe stuff feels forced in there. It feels unnecessary. Like, you really just don't need it. Going into Cobra Commander. Now, this one I am reading the first printing of number one. This is written by Joshua Williamson. The artist is Andrea Milana. And colorist is Annalisa Leone. And letter is, once again, Russ Wooten. So we open up to a winter scene, and it's like this. It looks like a dive bar, trucker stop type thing. It's called No Man's Land, and the door opens up. Like, everyone's having a good time in the bar, and the door opens up, and in walks Cobra Commander with in a trench coat and a hat. He's got his silver mask on and stuff like that. And, bartender says, "What will it be?" And Cobra Commander says, "I have need of a vehicle." speak now if you can be of assistance. And this one drunk guy comes over and he's like giving him a hard time. He's like, what's with the lisp? Dang, circus is in town. Good luck. It's cold out there. And he leaves. And Cobra Commander turns and heads towards him. And he says, and he's outside. And he's like, your vehicle will do nicely. And the guy's like, what the heck are you talking about? And then you hear screaming. And the vehicle drives off. And people in the bar come out because the bartender's like, you forgot to pay again when it came to the guy, the drunk guy that walked out. And we see a woman shriek, and here we see just the guy's hand in the snow, and we see blood around it, and there's a Cobra symbol in blood. So before all of that, we now are in like this weird alien looking place. It's like giant mushroom looking things and everything else. We see people walking around like these alien type looking beings. It's very bizarre. We're not told where we're at. We see a big boom, and then we hear a bunch of people yelling out, Cobra, la 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 la. They're throwing hand grenade type devices. And we see people talking, saying, word of the monstrosity we brought into our city leaked, and our people demand answers. Guards, protect us. Don't let them inside. We are only scientists. So basically, there's a group of scientists, and they're being attacked. And the people attacking them start busting in. The scientists are like, we gotta get out of here. But one of them gets shot in the head by one of the guards and says, no one retreats. These intruders may not see us as threats because we are scientists, but many things can be used as a weapon, and science is one of them. Our main goal now is to protect our research. So people are busting in, and they're fighting back. And just a big explosion happens. And the guy who was saying that they had to defend themselves with science and everything else gets just, like, blasted. Well, next thing we see is there's, like, these three-headed snakes or something like that in a jar. They insert their fangs into the guy's body, the one who got blasted and up and everything else. We then see him wrapped up in bandages a little bit later, and then we see a Cobra Commander helmet with the silver plate in front of it sitting on a table next to him. He picks it up, looks at it, and someone says, put it on, hide your shame. So basically, that helmet is meant to be shameful. And we see, when we turn the page, we see a couple Cobra Law guards and Pythona. And she says, you have been summoned. And I always liked the Pythona character. I always thought she was badass. She had some of the coolest parts in the animated movie. It's a shame we never got an action figure of her. I am seriously hoping, and I know not everyone shares these feelings, but I am seriously hoping that we get a classified version of her. Like, I would like one of her, and I'd like one of Nemesis Enforcer. As I get older, I mind less and less of Cobra Law stuff. It was a big departure from military type stuff in general. But when you're watching G.I. Joe cartoon, as we have done many times, it's not such a huge departure from some of the G.I. Joe episodes. In fact, some of the G.I. Joe episodes are more ridiculous than Cobra Law. So yeah, I don't really mind the Cobra Law stuff. Really much at all anymore. And I certainly don't mind what they did here in Cobra Commander. I know some people, once they saw it, they turned away from it and turned off from it. I think that was a mistake, because I think you can take a concept that maybe some people didn't like and do something really interesting with it and really cool with it. And I feel like that's what they did here. You get a lot of Cobra-La stuff in this first issue. You don't in the subsequent issues. Not a lot of it. You get some, but not very much. It is much more about Cobra Commander being out in the world, and he has Nemesis Enforcer with him, but it's not like that's not the not a huge focus. It's more like, okay, we're looking to take over the world. we've been this secret society for a while, hidden away, and now we're looking to take over the world. So, anyways, getting back to this issue here, Cobra Commander gets dressed, he puts on his helmet and everything else, and he goes in into like a meeting room that opens up, and all this looks very much like the movie environment that we know for Cobra-La. And we hear someone saying, "I found you lost in the outside world, aimless, searching for meaning, and brought you to Cobra-La, gave you a purpose. And this is how you repay me. Our people worship only the organic and gifts of the flesh and the natural order of life. Numerous science officers died while trying to harvest from the specimen, and yet you lived. You managed to not only interrogate it, but also find uses for its blasphemous technology." So basically, Cobra Commander was looking to use technology along with like organic stuff, and that goes against what they believe in. Cobra Commander says, "And I should be respected for that, Lord Globulus. Promoted in the ranks beyond just the bioscience labs into a position of leadership, and yet you have kept me under your heel there. Why?" And Globulus, who looks very intimidating in this, by the way, he says, "There have been too many leaks about the atrocities happening within the science compound. The citizens are upset that someone would dare blemish our ways with anything from the outside, and you are to blame." And he's like, "No, I've been loyal." And Globulus says, "Lies. I know you instigated the riots. I will not tolerate betrayal. I healed you because I wanted to watch you die with my own eyes." And Cobra Commander gets surrounded by Cobra-La guards, and they attack him. Cobra Commander actually dodges them, and he's like, "Regardless of what happened in the science compound, I am not much of a fighter, my lord. I prefer to let others do the fighting for me." And he pulls out these like insectoid robotic things and unleashes them from his hands. And he says, "Fear and hate are useful in keeping the citizens in line. You have proven that countless times. But Cobra-La is a powder keg. We've been cut off from the world for so long that our resources are dwindling. And as much as it pains me to say civil war is imminent, something must be done. But as you can see, I found a way to strengthen Cobra-La. My ways may be underhanded, but everything was done in your name. What you see here is just a taste of what is possible." And basically, like, these little bug-like creatures have, like, burrowed into the Cobra-La guards and, like, bursted through their chests and burst through their necks and everything. Just, like, blood is splattering everywhere. Like, Cobra Commander... Well, I'll get more into that a little bit later, but... Anyways, Cobra Commander himself says, "To further your control of the world and give you what you want, you must trust me. I will prove my undying loyalty to you and Cobra-La, but to do all these things, you must give me a new title, and I must leave my home here for a special mission in the outside world. My fate and the fate of Cobra-La is in your hands now, my lord." And he walks out, and the doors close behind him. And he says, "You probably hoped I was dead." And we turn the page, and we see that what he's been keeping secret and hidden was actually the body of Megatron. And he says to him, "Too bad. You have served me well, machine. I was honest with Globulus. My loyalty to him and Cobra is steadfast. After each of our sessions, I did my duty and reported my findings, except the data within your paints a fractured story of the galaxies beyond ours. Cobra is advanced for a civilization on Earth, but it pales in comparison to what waits in space." And so we see Megatron, like, he is... He looks like he's on his knees. He has no arms. He's had part of his face removed. We see glimpses, like, evidently, Cobra Commander's connected to his memory banks and everything else, and has been able to see, like, Cybertron and the battle that happened there. He zaps Megatron. He basically says, like, tells him that sacrifice is going to help benefit and change everything. Then as he walks out, he says, "Globulus will have his army and I will lead. And no force in Cobra Law or in any world will be able to stop us." And then as he leaves, the doors close and Megatron looks up. One eye that's still remaining turns red and he's smiling. And that is very intimidating, because in the situation he's in, you wouldn't think he'd be smiling. And then we skip ahead to now, where this was shortly after Cobra Commander took that vehicle from the guy, killing him. And he's standing there looking at the sunset, and someone says, "First you wander off and you're on your own and kill a human. Now you stop here for no reason. My orders are to keep you safe while you finish your mission. We should be on the move, Commander, now that we have transportation. Every stop is a waste of time. That means you must stay in my sight." So they decide they're going to be heading to Florida. That's where Cobra Commander tells them they need to go. The guy is just this big, muscle-bound guy that's meant to protect them, but... we find out later that it's Nemesis Enforcer. We actually see that occur in issue 3, which is the one that just came out. He like opens up his wings and has to take on a whole bunch of people. But they're going to go to the Everglades, which is where there's the energy source that Cobra Commander has learned exists, from Megatron. And of course, that is where the Dreadnoks are. So that's where the issue ends. And issue 2 does pick up with Cobra Commander meeting the Dreadnoks. And it doesn't go the way you'd think. It's not like they're best friends with each other. And the whole Nemesis Enforcer thing, it gets to be very brutal with that. You don't get to see it. In fact, a lot of times that's what's happening, is like your imagination is more powerful than... of what happened is more powerful than what actually did happen. So it's really good. So when you're looking at these series, like, and the Dreadnoks are really awesome. You get to see the Thunder Machine for a little bit. And, it's done really well. So when you're looking at these different series, you can view Void Rivals as a pure science fiction. You can view Transformers as, it's science fiction, but it's like science fiction on Earth, and it's very action-oriented. Duke is very militaristic. It's very military. It's dealing with issues of PTSD. It's dealing with conspiracies and things like that going on. Cobra Commander is a title that's very like sci-fi horror in a lot of respects. I think that's the best way to describe it. It's not like horror in the sense of like slasher or supernatural or anything like that, but it's horror, sci-fi horror in the sense of like Cobra Law Society is kind of like this threat that's out there, and they're willing to be brutal. At least Cobra Commander is willing to be brutal. So think very much like how Starscream was willing to squash somebody. Like, that's how Cobra Commander is, which is very fitting considering they were in the cartoons. They were both voiced by the same person. So I'm very curious where this is all going to go. We know that Duke and Cobra Commander are going to end with, I think, with issue 6. And then we're going to be getting a Destro miniseries and a Scarlet miniseries. And my guess is that we're going to keep getting some of these miniseries for a little while. Like, some people have speculated that after Scarlet and Destro, we'll probably get a G.I. Joe title. I'm not 100% sure about that. I think we will get a G.I. Joe title eventually. I think that's a foregone conclusion. But I have a feeling like we might get like a Snake Eyes miniseries. And I'm actually very impressed that we have not gotten a Snake Eyes miniseries to kick things off, or even as in the second wave. Like, we got a Scarlet and a Destro one. Snake Eyes would have been very easy to do if they wanted to, but I like that we're not just jumping to that. I like that we're going to get Scarlet. And I know Scarlet, from what I've heard about the premise, is like, her story is going to wrap into the Arashikage clan. So we might get Snake Eyes at some point in there. We'll likely get Storm Shadow. So I think that's really cool. I love the fact that we're getting a Destro thing, story, miniseries. Obviously, it probably plays right out of Duke, stuff. And I would not be surprised if once we do get a G.I. Joe ongoing, which I think would have to happen at some point, if we don't also get a Cobra Commander ongoing, not Cobra Commander, just a Cobra ongoing, to see that side of things as well. And then have some crossover arcs and everything else. So that's my anticipation. I really like Cobra Commander was just above Void Rivals. And then like Duke and Transformers was like way up high. But after reading 3 issues of Cobra Commander, I am liking the Cobra Commander issues, series, mini series, so much more than I did after the first issue. Like, I do really like this first issue that I just covered with you guys, but the subsequent issues are even better. Cause you're getting further away from Cobra Law stuff, even though it's still there. And I do like how they used it. They actually did a good job of using it. So I think one of the things that bothered people a lot of times was you had G.I. Joe being military. You had Cobra just being like some guy that oversees a terrorist organization. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we got this story of like Cobra Law and Globulus and all this stuff going on. Whereas with this, we're starting off with that as the origin and everything. I also think, like I said, I think that some people that were reading the comics read all the military stuff. And then when they saw, and I think this is what happened with Chuck, especially, like, he was a heavy comic book reader for G.I. Joe. And that is very military based. And then when you see that, when you're reading that, and that is your G.I. Joe most of the time, you're watching the cartoon. I know he was watching the cartoon, but like, you're watching the cartoon once a day, but then you're reading the comics the whole rest of the time. And you're playing with the action figures the whole rest of the time. And those, all their file cards are all very militaristic. And then you see this movie and it's more like the cartoon series, to be perfectly honest, than it is about the, that's not a slight at the cartoon, but like I said, the cartoon again, we've covered some of those episodes on this show. They get really ridiculous at times. Some of them are amazing episodes, but some of them are completely off the wall ridiculous, and they are far worse than the Cobra Law stuff, in my opinion. So I don't mind the Cobra Law stuff. And like I said, as I've gotten older, I mind it less and less. In fact, there's aspects of it that I really like, and I really love what they're doing with it here. So those are the 4 Energon Universe titles, that are out there right now. We'll see what comes next. I think Transformers is just going to continue being an ongoing. Void Rivals, I assume, is going to continue being an ongoing. And then, like I said, we're getting some miniseries for the Joe universe, which I think is a smart move. I think it's they're being well done so far. I'm excited about the ones that are coming up. And they're getting top creative people on these titles. Like, really good writers and artists and everything else around these titles. And I think because of the success of this is why we're getting Jason Aaron on Turtles. Is because they're like, hey, if we put really good qualified people on these titles, then we'll get the sales. And yeah, you will. So keep it up. One last thing I wanted to do, is with all these titles coming out, like I said, there's more 80s stuff that's coming out. I wanted to do a top 10, 1980s properties list. I know we talk about it on the show quite a bit. And I know you guys probably know what my top ones are and everything else, but I don't think we've ever done a top 10, and I want to kind of like hit that and kind of let you know, like, what's out there for me personally, like, and you can put your own top 10 or top 5, whatever's easier for you, but I think there's enough out there to do a top 10, for anybody, if you are a fan of 1980s. Properties and everything. So I did not put Star Wars in the list because even though we cover Star Wars on the show here, it's not a 1980s property. It started in the late 70s. I didn't put Micronauts in here because that also was a late 1970s, mid to late 1970s property. And I know you're thinking, well, yeah, but you probably have G.I. Joe on your list, and you're right, I do. But they're like, you know, G.I. Joe started before the 80s. It did. But it was the 1980s version is a completely new iteration of what G.I. Joe was before that. Like, it might as well be completely two different properties, two different toy lines. I know they've done a very good job of blending the two together over time, but with characters and everything else. But let's face it, the G.I. Joe from the 80s is completely separate, completely its own thing from what came before that. So, all right. So I have my top 10 here. Some of these you may never even have heard of before. But I'm going to go through my honorable mentions first, and then we'll go through my top 10. So honorable mentions I have is, and these are just like my personal favorites. Yours may be different. And when I was putting this list together, I was thinking of stuff like the toys, the property itself, like the characters and stuff like that, the mythos, like, and the potential. So not always necessarily what we got, but what I think it could be and what I would like it to be and things like that. Like, is there potential to have some really good stories and really good things come out of these properties that maybe we didn't get, at a different time. So my honorable mentions still fall in that category. Like, these are things that, that I think still have a lot of potential. If I ever had a chance to write some of these, I would jump at the chance for it. So even though they're not my top 10, I still think there's like some awesome stuff in these to really work with. So, Tiger Sharks, I think, is an awesome concept. I think I liked the cartoon when I was a kid. The toys looked cool. I never had any of them, but they looked cool. I did make, using Constructs, toy building, I did create the shark, submersible thing that was on the show. I made a version of that for myself because I thought that was an awesome looking ship. But yeah, I love the concept of Tiger Sharks, and I think there's a lot that could be done. I know that they tried it, kind of hinting and incorporating them into the 2011, I think it was, Thundercats show. We saw them on a screen and everything else. And I think if that show kept going on, we may have gotten some type of version of the Tiger Sharks. And I think that might be the better route to go, is what they were kind of showing there, is like almost like they are their own species rather than it being what it was, which was like humans developing not an ability, but developing technology to change themselves into these through genetic splicing and things like that into sea creature anthropomorphic things. I don't know. It's I just think there's like a lot there. Like maybe that is the route that you go with. So yeah, maybe that's the route. I just feel like there's a lot of potential there. I really like the characters. Some of them are a bit goofy, like the villains are a bit goofy and everything else. But I think there's potential there to do some cool stuff. Silverhawks, very, very cool. Didn't make my top 10, because my top 10 ended up being like stuff that, had those potential reasons for me. But I think Silverhawks is awesome. I do think there's potential there. That's something that I would, love to work on if I ever had a chance to. Inhumanoids, I think there's so much potential with the Inhumanoids. I never had any of the toys. I loved how some of the creatures looked. I think there's just a really cool horror type story that you could do with the Inhumanoids. I don't want to go like full on horror, like turning it into something that's not. But I feel like if you deal with like these creatures, like, and that they're attacking, you know, human society and everything else, and then you bring in people to fight them and take them down, like, I think that that could be like a horror action. Like, I feel like that, I feel like that's what it was and that's what it was always meant to be. But I feel like, man, you could really do a cool comic with that. So I think there's a lot of potential. I always loved the toys, never owned any of them. I have a couple that I would love to own at some point. I think the one was named just Tendril or something like that, but it was the swamp creature looking guy. Very, very cool. That's one where, like, if I had the opportunity to write stories, like, I would do so much research on what was already out there and see what I could do to expand upon that. Dino Riders is another one where I think there's just a lot of potential. The toys looked awesome. Again, never had any as a kid, but I thought the toys looked amazing. There was a part of me that always wanted them, but I never asked for them. But I think the toys are absolutely really, really cool. And I think that could be a cool story. I know that there was a very short comic. I think it was only a one issue thing with Dino Riders that came out. So, yeah, I just think there's a lot of potential there. I do remember watching some of the cartoons. Didn't watch a lot of them, but I did watch some of them. So, Adventures of the Galaxy Rangers is one that I think, I don't remember there ever being a toy for it, but I remember the cartoon. And again, I feel like there's just a lot of story potential with that. Like, they just look like cool-ass characters. With cool ass abilities, and man, I would like space western. Yes, sign me up. And then robotics is the other honorable mention. That might be a lot tougher to pull off nowadays. I did have some of the robotics toys when I was a kid. And for those of you who don't know, robotics was like basically another building toy, but it had like movable mechanical parts. So there'd always be like a unit that had the engine in it. And then you connected pieces to that, and what you would build would be like robotic creatures. So like it would be like almost like a Tyrannosaurus Rex looking thing out of, but it was futuristic robotic pieces, and they made a whole story. There was actually Saturday morning cartoons based on robotics that I think did a really, really good job. There was, I think, just one comic, one issue. May have been a three-issue miniseries, but I think it was just one issue. But I remember watching the cartoon, really liking the cartoon. Like I said, I did have a couple of the building sets when I was a kid. So those were all my honorable mentions. Now we'll get into the top 10. Number 10 for me is one that's very obscure for a lot of people. You probably never heard of it before. Especially when it comes to the toys, there was a Marvel comic for it. very near and dear to my heart, which is Star Wars. I had a lot of the Star Wars toys when I was a kid. They are such a mismatch and, of different stuff that you could tell were never meant to go together, but they do. I at some point before the show, Star Wars is over, I want to do an episode just on Star Wars and kind of go into it in depth, because it gets very complex. There's like multiple factions on both sides, and it's almost like roles, but it's also like factions. It's weird. And then there's just like I said, I would have to do my homework on it as well, because it's been a while since I like really looked into them. But like, I feel like with Star Wars, it just needs to have a good story. You need to clean up the messiness of it. Because there's a lot of the toys and everything else, they don't go together, but I know I could write a story that where they would go together. But you need to clean up some of the other mess that goes along with all the factions and everything else. Like, it's too convoluted and too complex, for what it is. But man, the toys are just bizarre. Like, in the sense of, like, none of them, you would never put these things together and go, oh, these are all part of the same toy line. No, you just wouldn't. Like, there's certain ones, the groups that you'd be like, okay, yeah, these go together and these probably go together. But all the rest and then the one-offs and everything else, they just don't go together. Like I said, we'll have to cover it. But I did have a lot of the toys as a kid. I absolutely loved so many things from this toy line. Never read the comic. I think it's a 4-issue miniseries. I need to pick that up sometime and read it. This was one of those toys that did come with the mini comics for some of them, and that was really cool. I have a few of the mini comics. I want to try to get all of them so I could actually read that version of the canon, and then I want to get the miniseries from Marvel, which I've heard is very different. It does have, blanking on his name right now. But anyways, Sienkiewicz art. That's who I was trying to think of. It has Sienkiewicz art in it. And so that's another reason to want to read it and everything. But yeah, that's probably a little pocket of stuff that I would like to get the mini comics of, which a lot of times the mini comics is if you're getting the toys, and the toys are expensive. So we'll see. But yeah, I'd like to read those. Number 9 for me is Battle Beasts. I loved Battle Beasts as a kid. I had so many of the Battle Beasts, and I remember watching the commercials for it and thinking that there was a cartoon out there for it also. And there was, but there wasn't. There was the Battle Beasts are from the Transformers universe originally, and they show up in one of the cartoons of the late seasons. And it's just, I think it's for one episode. And, but I love the concept. And IDW tried bringing Battle Beasts back, and I was so excited when they were doing that. And they just lost all the concepts of Battle Beasts. Basically, they took the concept of, okay, these are humanoid animals with some battle armor on and weapons, and they fight each other. And it's like, yeah, in essence, it's Battle Beasts, but you're missing the whole fire, wood, and water aspect to it, which is essentially rock, paper, scissors. You didn't show any of the characters from the original line. Like, where's Pirate Lion and stuff like that? Like, you don't have to call them that, but if you really did have the license to do the comic based on that property, use the characters that were already out there and the looks of them and everything else. Like, that's what people, like, that's what I would want to do. And I don't know if that's allowed or not or whatever, but that's what I would want to do. I would want to create actual factions, like the three factions, use the stuff that was from the toys, and make it work. Like, I think there's some really cool... I remember having a lot of the Battle Beast toys as a kid. I don't have any of them now. I would love to track down a few of my favorites from when I was a kid and get those again. But, yeah, I mean, it's just... There was so much potential with that. So, number eight for me is Sektars. I mentioned that Sektars is coming back in the comic. Very excited about that. It was a short-lived cartoon. It was actually a cartoon. You can look it up on YouTube. I think you can actually watch episodes. It wasn't good. it's a bad cartoon, but it was a cartoon. Also, there was another one, I believe, I'm almost certain it had the mini comics. It did have a nine issue series through Marvel, which that was actually pretty good. I do remember that. I know it must have had the mini comics because I'm almost certain that I covered one of the mini comics for Star Joes. Like, cause you could, at one time, there was a Sektars website and you could actually read those online. I don't think it exists anymore. I think it got taken down or just they didn't pay for it anymore and it just disappeared, which is a shame because you used to be able to read the mini comics on there, which was awesome. And then you could learn about all the different characters and stuff like that. So, but yeah, it's, the toys were awesome. I had a couple of them as a kid. I had the dragonfly with Prince Dargon on it and that was awesome. Later on I got Spydrax. So yeah, I did get the Zika 3¾-inch figures of Spydrax and Prince Dargon, but I ended up selling them recently because I just didn't know what I was going to do with them. Like I didn't want to necessarily keep them in the packaging, but I didn't necessarily want to take them out of the packaging. I had no space for them. So I sold them. It's one thing too, as I'm getting older and I think a lot of my friends are experiencing this, like, you start realizing, like, when it comes to collecting, at least for me, and it might be different for other people, and that's totally fine. But for me, I'm starting to go like, okay, I have all this stuff I accumulated, and I can't see it, and I can't enjoy it. And I'm literally getting stuff just to get it and to have it, and not to actually, like, have it on display and enjoy it and everything else. And it's just become clutter. So I've been selling stuff and getting rid of stuff that I'm like, I don't know where I'm going to put that. It's been sitting in the basement for the last 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years without me paying attention to it. So why am I keeping it? So I've been getting stuff set up and so much happier seeing like displays actually set up in like my guest room where I spend a lot of my time because I work in there. And in the basement, stuff like that, getting stuff set up, to where I can enjoy it and easily access things and everything else too. Everything else can go. And I honestly don't think I'm going to miss it. I love Sektars. Like I said, number 8 on my list of properties from the 80s. I'll get the comics when they come out. I'm excited about that. I have the 9-issue series from Marvel, in my collection. I'm happy with that. So, didn't have really a place to keep the Sektar stuff that I had. So, number 7 is Thundercats. Maybe low for some people. Me having it on as number 7 might be considered low by some people. I really like Thundercats. I think some of the, comics that have been done through Wildstorm, I think those were awesome comics. I have all of them. I really enjoyed them when they came out, reading them and everything else. I need to go back at some point and reread them. But yeah, really liked that. I liked the cartoon as a kid. I thought it was a lot of fun. I actually liked the Thundercats cartoon as a kid more than Masters of the Universe cartoon. Even though I really liked Masters of the Universe Filmation cartoon, I liked the Thundercats cartoon better. For me, and I don't know if it still holds up the same way, it felt like it had less hokey things going on in it than the Masters of the Universe did. The 2011 animated show, I think, is one of the best things in animation that ever came out. And it's a shame that it didn't continue. And I know it was just due to toy sales, which sucks because it's like, oh, it's a great show. Who cares if the toys weren't selling? It's a great show. I do have the DVD or the Blu-ray of it that has all of it. So I need to rewatch that sometime, but I really loved that. The new comic is out. I will cover that very soon. It's pretty good. Like, it's not great. It's not Energon Universe level, but it's enjoyable. I'm hoping for some really good things coming up with it. But yeah, it's like Thundercats is a good, solid property. I think one of the things that holds it back for me or makes it a little bit lower is the potential for growth. Like, it's not as big of a universe. There's not as big a cast of characters as some of the other things that I've already talked about. So that's what kind of keeps it low. Like, I feel like even Sektars has a little bit, maybe not. I was going to say, maybe Sektars might even have more, a larger cast of characters, but probably not. But like, Battlebeast definitely does. Starior's, yeah, probably, with all the stuff that they have. Silverhawks, possibly. But again, these are all like lower level than Thundercats. When we get up to my number 6 and on, I feel like the cast of characters is a bit larger. Well, maybe not my number 6, but after that, definitely. So my number 6 is Visionaries. I love the potential of Visionaries, and I love the concept of it with these holograms that they can come out and they can use them in battle and everything else. The cartoon, I really enjoyed the cartoon. I know IDW tried to bring Visionaries back, but they kind of like warped it from what it originally was. I think there was potential there for that though. I think they could have gone with some of the more modern look that they were going for while still being more true to what we knew of Visionaries. And I don't think they did that at all. I think they used, it was like Visionaries in name only and not in the actual execution. So I would love to be able to work on something like that. I think that there's a lot of potential there to really make it a visual spectacle, like in a good way. I don't mean like just all visuals and no substance, but I think there's a way to capitalize on it. Almost to the level of like you'd see with Green Lantern, except that with Visionaries, it would be like you have specified hard light type things that are happening and stuff like that. So, and making it magical in a lot of respects. So yeah, I just feel like with Visionaries too, you're dealing with like some of the vehicles are technology based stuff. So I feel like it's like, again, like much like Masters of the Universe, you're dealing with stuff that's like mystical, but also technological. And I always love that. So, my number 5 is Mask. Mobile Armor Strike Command. It's Mask. We've talked about it many times on the show. I feel, again, cast of characters pretty large for it. Especially when you really expand out to how far out it went out. And, just love the concept. You know, you got a vehicle that transforms from one vehicle to another. You have an awesome, diverse group of team members, all walks of life, and they all have these helmets with these abilities. Like, it's just a really cool concept. Again, IDW brought that back. I thought they actually did a pretty good job, even though they changed the whole Matt Tracker thing. I think they did a pretty good job. I think it could have been a little bit better, than it was, but I think they did a good job. Number 4 is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, a property that, probably would have been lower on my list years ago because I watched the 80s cartoon. It was fun. Never got any of the toys. Didn't care about the toys. They looked, in my opinion, they looked like He-Man versions of the turtles and didn't look like what I was seeing in the cartoon or anything like that. I now have a lot of the NECA turtle figures, and I'm finally putting them up on display in a glass case in my room so I can enjoy them. And those represent the cartoon versions, so I really like it for that reason. The comics, I never really got, the reason they've moved up to number 4 for me is because I never really got into the comics too much as a kid. I had a Mirage trade paperback, which I still have today. I actually got it signed by Kevin Eastman. I read that as a kid and loved that. I thought it was fantastic. That was my first exposure to the Turtles. They fought the Triceratons in that because, like, it was book 2 collected edition. I now have all 4 books that they did from that era. And then that was my only exposure until the cartoon came out. And was really 2 volumes. My cousin got volume 1 and I got volume 2. I read volume 2. He read volume 1. Then we switched. I didn't really notice. It didn't really matter that I read 2 first. But yeah, so I watched the cartoon, enjoyed the cartoon, and that was basically it for me with Turtles for a long time. And then when we started doing the show, if you remember really, really early episodes, I even said that we weren't going to cover the Turtles because it wasn't a big thing for Chuck. It wasn't a big thing for me. And then IDW came out with the new Turtles series and I was like, all right, I want to kind of check it out. We'll see. And it was fantastic. So I really enjoyed that. That got me into going back and reading other Turtle stuff. So I got the Dreamwave issues. I don't know if I have all of them, but I have some of them. I got the collected editions of the original Mirage stuff, and I've been reading some of that. I haven't read all of it yet, but I read some of it. I've been getting the trades that fill in the gaps of those, because those hardcovers are just covering the Eastman and Laird stuff, and there was stuff in between. There was also Tales of the TMNT. So I have all the trades that gather all that type of stuff. Like I said, I've been enjoying the IDW run. I need to get caught up on it it's not going to happen before the relaunch, but I want to read the relaunch. I would like to try to get caught up on that so I can cover it with you guys on the show in a more timely fashion than I did the Energon Universe stuff, but we'll see. But yeah, Turtles have become a lot more of an interest to me than they ever were in the past because of me getting into all the comic stuff and then me having the NECA figures and stuff like that. So Turtles, and then also the Nickelodeon series I thought was really good. Rise of the TMNT was horrible. The Michael Bay produced movies, the first one was awful. The second one I thought was a bit better because it was more fun. And you got to see Rocksteady and Bebop, or Bebop and Rocksteady. But I'm trying to think what else. Like I said, I liked the Nickelodeon show. I thought that was done well. Oh, Turtles Forever is phenomenal. It's like one of the best 1980s properties movies out there, in my opinion. So I highly recommend that. Number 3 for me is Masters of the Universe. I know I give Chuck flack for it all the time. I give my one friend Sam a hard time because he's a big MOTU fan as well. But I really do like Masters of the Universe a lot. It's probably moved up higher in my list than where it was in the past because of multiple reasons. One is I really love the Netflix series. I know some people are like bashing it and everything else, but I'm just sick and tired of people bashing shit. Like, I just watch it, and if I like it, then I like it. I don't give a shit if you like it. I don't give a shit if someone else likes it. I might have a discussion with you about it, like why you don't like it and everything else, and that's fine. But your opinion of why you hate it is not gonna faze me if I like it. It's the same thing with Star Wars for me. Like, I like the stuff that's coming out for Star Wars. You don't have to. That's fine. I don't care. like if you want to have a discussion with me as to why you don't like He-Man, Revolutions, like what your points are, that's great. I'm all for a debate of ideas and hearing you out, stuff like that. Same thing with Star Wars and everything like that. But if it's just, if your thing is just like, oh, they destroyed it, blah, 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 I don't have time for that type of whiny bullshit anymore. Just if you have legitimate reasons, hey, let's talk about it, then that's cool. That's totally fine with me. But if it's just like, and the stuff you don't like doesn't mean it's going to change my opinion at all. But it's fine if you don't like it, you know, nothing wrong with that. But anyways, going back to, I loved Revelations. I loved Revolution. Thought both were fantastic. I haven't finished watching it, but I even like the reimagined Netflix one, which is done in like CG. I think that's fun. It's a completely different take, but I think it's fun. I tried watching the She-Ra cartoon, not really made for me. I did watch quite a few episodes of it though. It's good. It's just not necessarily designed for me. And that's fine because it's not meant to be designed for me. It's meant to be designed for a much younger audience. But like I said, I still think, like, I watched enough episodes to go, okay, this is pretty good. It's just not for me. And the CG one's the same way. Like, it's not made for me, but I actually really enjoy it. So I do want to finish watching that. But yeah, I loved Revelation. I loved Revolution. Again, maybe you didn't, but I did. I loved the comics that DC was doing. Those were amazing. With Popmon art and everything else. I thought those were fantastic. The comics that have been coming out lately haven't really had me all that excited. There's a couple of miniseries that came out not that long ago. The latest couple miniseries I haven't read yet. So, I do have them. I need to read them. Hoping that those ones will be better. But yeah, the stuff that came out from DC was fantastic. I wish they could have continued that. And obviously I loved the stuff, before that, that was all the, blanking on the name of it right now. Sam will tell me or Chuck will tell me, but it was an independent company that had the license and they did a phenomenal job. Like that's when you had the Icons of Evil one shots and everything else. So, number two for me is G.I. Joe. So, and then number one is Transformers. So number one and number two, I've mentioned this so many times on the show, they could flip flop. Tomorrow, G.I. Joe could be number one and Transformers is number two. But right now, Transformers, the comic series, is the best version of Transformers that I have seen in a long time. I enjoy it so much. It's the best start to a Transformers series ever. It's just, it gets me pumped every time, I read a new issue of it. I love the Netflix series that came out. I never finished the one that went into like the Beast Wars stuff. I need to circle back and finish that, but I loved everything before that. Yeah, it's just, like you said, the new comic series is what mostly has me jazzed for it. No pun intended with jazz. But I've got some really cool action figures from that and everything else. And then G.I. Joe, again, this might be one that, like, tomorrow I wake up and go, yeah, I think G.I. Joe might be my number one. I'm loving Duke. I'm loving Cobra Commander. Bet you guys never thought you'd hear me say I'm loving Duke, but I am loving the Duke series. A Real American Hero, I have not read any of, I know I'm a bad Joe fan, but I haven't read any of the new Skybound stuff for A Real American Hero. I read everything up to that point. I was way behind. I got caught up to that point. And I totally get why, people kind of felt like underwhelmed with 300 because 300 just kind of ended and you kind of had to figure something was coming after that. And we all knew there was, but still 300 felt like it should have had some type of ending and then had that relaunch. But yeah, it was kind of like a non-ending issue. And that's what kind of sucked about it. like, in my opinion, it kind of sucked. Like, because I was actually getting into the story quite a bit. I was like, oh, I'm liking this. And then I read 300 and I go, it ended. And I was like, what? That's not an ending. Like, and then I find out, like, I mean, granted, again, we knew beforehand, but then you find out, like, oh, yeah, he's completely planning on continuing that story into 301 with whoever the publisher was going to be. And at that time, we didn't know. But I was like, that's still a crap reason for not giving you an ending in a 300th issue. It wasn't even like it was a big monumental moment in 300 where you're like, oh, look at this amazing cliffhanger that they're putting in 300. Yeah, it was just kind of lackluster, and I think that's why I haven't jumped into the new one, although I've heard the new stuff has been really good. So, yeah, I got to get caught up on that. So, and then the G.I. Joe Classified line, I'm loving that line. I'm pretty much near the end of it for myself. Like, there's a couple figures. Really just, like, I'm trying to think, like, maybe five figures that I can think off the top of my head that they haven't done yet that I would like. Like, there's Wetsuit I'd like them to do as a figure. Law and Order I'd like to see as a figure. And I wouldn't even mind a Big Lob figure, to be honest with you. But Law and Order for sure, and Wetsuit for sure, are two of my favorites that they haven't done yet. And then, trying to think on the Cobra side, there's nobody left in Cobra that I want. I mentioned Pythona and Nemesis Enforcer. And I think they're planning on making both of those, so I'm not sure, though. But both of those, and then with the Dreadnoughts, Monkey Wrench and Thrasher, I like both of them. But they've done all the other Dreadnoughts that I would want. I know that there's other ones still out there, but, like, I don't want a Road Pig. I don't give a shit about Road Pig. Oh, Xandar. I had him as a kid. So that was my Zartan as a kid, so that's why I would like them to do him. I have Zarana, I will have Torch when he comes out, and Buzzer and Ripper I have. I think they both already came out and I have them. I know they got them lined up. But yeah, I had Monkey Wrench as a kid and I loved the look of that figure. I had Thrasher as a kid and I love the Thunder Machine, but I'm so afraid of that being a HasLab one and that I won't have Thrasher because of it, because I don't have room for a HasLab level Thunder Machine. As much as I would love it, it was one of my favorite vehicles growing up. I don't have room for that. So yeah, I think that's all the ones I can think of that we don't have yet that I would still like to get if they make them. Yeah, I can't think of anyone else. Like, they've done a good job of covering a lot of the characters. And I know there's some that are still out there that maybe some of you guys are like, oh no, I still want, they still need to make this one and that one. And I hope they make all of them, for you. It's just, I'm trying to think of ones that had some type of meaning for me growing up. And, I guess the only other one on the Joe side is maybe Sci-Fi. He was one of the last figures I even got as a kid. I don't know. So, but that's my list of favorite, top 10 favorite 1980s properties that I think are awesome. These are my favorites, and I think they all have a lot of awesome potential. Some of them are being utilized for their potential now. Some of them could be utilized for their potential. I think if I had a choice, even though it's like these are my top 10 and this isn't necessarily the number one or anything like that for me, if I had my top choice of ones I would want to write a story for, like give me a mini series or something like that to see, like, is there interest, and then maybe I expand on that. I think my number one would be Battle Beasts. My number two would be Visionaries. My number three would be Inhumanoids. And my number four would probably be Star Wars. I think those are like the four then I would be like, please give me a chance to write these characters, and I'll do an awesome job for like a 4-issue miniseries. And then if that does well, we'll expand more. But yeah, Battle Beast is probably number one on the list when it comes to that, because I just feel like there's so much potential there. If I'm allowed to use Battle Beast in the way that the toy was as a kid in the cartoon, not the cartoon, but the commercial cartoon portrayed it. Like, let me keep them as those forms of characters. And I think the reason why I would love to write them the most is because there's no defining characteristics of them. So it opens the door for me to be able to create personalities that don't already exist, where like G.I. Joe and Transformers and stuff like that, they have established things. Like, you can't write Optimus Prime as an asshole unless you're doing Shattered Glass Universe stuff. Like, you have to write him a certain way. Whereas with Battle Beast, there isn't that that's not already established yet. So you can totally take this character that's going to be this type, and this character is going to be that type, and really build a world. So I think that's why I would pick that. I think that's why I would pick a lot of these ones, like Visionaries. I think there's some establishment, but you can do more to really expand on that. Same thing with Star Wars. There's really nothing there, so you can totally expand on that. And in Humanoids, same thing. Like, there's not a lot there personality-wise that you have to really worry about destroying for somebody. So, like I said, if I got to write any of those four, I would do it in a heartbeat and would totally put a huge effort into that. So, but yeah, tell me what your top 10 are. You can put it in the comments on Facebook when this is posted. And I'm very curious what are your top 10 favorite 1980s properties. I know some people probably have like Brave Star on there and things like that. Like, there's a lot out there that people don't realize. So curious if you have any obscure ones like I do. With that, again, sorry this episode took so long to come out, but hopefully I made it worth it. I do plan on coming back soon and doing coverage of Thundercats and Nasalverse, because again, it's Nasalverse and Nasalverse or something like that is going to have like Sectars and stuff like that. So I plan on covering that. I plan on getting caught up on some Star Wars stuff so I can cover some Star Wars issues. I want to get caught up on Turtles, so when that comes out, I can cover those issues. So yeah, I'm expecting more. I do plan on having Grub and John on with me again soon. I plan on doing something with Anthony again in the future. So yeah, there's more coming. It'll probably be a lot more episodes like this where it's late at night, just me with the recorder and covering something with you, or just musing about various news that's coming out about 1980s properties that we love. So, like I said, hope this was worth the wait. And I'll get this out to you guys as soon as possible. It'll definitely be out before March ends. So, and then I'll work on getting another episode done, as quickly as possible. So I'm not gone. We're going to do more episodes. I'm sorry it's taken so long to get another episode out to you guys, but I will do my best to make sure you don't have to wait that long again. So with that, I'll go ahead and please, by the time this comes out, my Kickstarter still will not have launched yet, because it'll be April 7th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It'll run for 30 days. Please support it. It is a passion. I really, if you got the first issue and you were underwhelmed by it, it is very much like a golden age type story in the first issue. Like, hero gets her powers, she fights the bad guy, end of story. But there's a lot of little nuances that I threw in there that I expand upon in the second issue. And that really kind of opens up for the reader to see like, oh, this is a bigger story than you think. And then the third issue is kind of a flashback story of Ari the Elf, and how he got to be where he's at in where we see him in the second issue. So you see some glimpses of issues 1 and issue 2, and what happened from his perspective and everything else. So you get some payoffs from things that you already read. There's some payoffs as to like how did certain things happen. And you also get to see a bit more of the bigger universe that I'm crafting. So please check it out, if nothing else, for Joel's artwork, because it's amazing. Heather Breckel is our new colorist, and she does an incredible job. I already got some colored pages back from her. Yeah, I appreciate the support. We have some amazing rewards that I'll talk about next time. But with that, I'll go ahead and close the episode by saying the Force will be with you, because knowing us is half the battle. Take care, everyone.